Welcome to Reading Deadly Troubadours, the weekly podcast where I, Brent Thomas, read my novel, Deadly Troubadours. Let's begin, shall we?
Chapter 29, Demetrius Tate, Origins 6. You have pleased me very much. Demetrius beamed up at the words of praise. He tried hard to please her, but it was something he rarely achieved. Her moods could change in an instant. She would be smiling down at him like the favored pet that he was, and suddenly the smile would turn to scowl. Her eyes would grow cold, and she would cease to acknowledge his presence. This could continue for days. It was those times when he was thankful that his little workroom was as damp as it was. He had grown accustomed to hunger so that the pains in his belly scarcely registered until the fourth day with nothing to eat. Not having a mirror made it easier to cope, since he did not have to be confronted with his skeletal appearance. Once he had snuck away a single blossom of the cherry tulips that ever decorated her table. Its bitter flavor settled the question of whether it had been named for its flavor or coloring. Still, it would have made a decent meal if he had not woken in the middle of the night with a searing pain in his stomach that persisted long after he had retched up the remains of the bitter petals. He was not sure if it was the flower itself or the crone that had caused the pain. Regardless, her manner over the following days showed that she must have known he had defied her by sneaking food. What was most difficult during those times when she was displeased with him was less the absence of food, but in not being given fresh water. He had used his magics to melt various things with little success. He had tried drinking transmuted paper and wood, but they had just left him thirstier. But he had discovered that by combining sigils for force and shape, he could pull the moisture off the stone walls and use it to fill a cup he had fashioned from hardened paper. The water tasted of dirt and grime, but it cooled his parched and burning throat. But today he had pleased her, so he had hopes of water that tasted pure, and perhaps food that had been prepared. Depending on his performance, he would at times be invited back to her table, or just given an animal that had yet to be sacrificed to consume. As for the animals that they had destroyed in order to create, she often blessed him by allowing Demetrius to keep the remains. He often feasted on what he was given, but occasionally he would try and resist the urge to gorge himself and keep some of the remains for a later date. There were magical ways to freshen old bone and gristle, all that was often left behind after being used to create. But he had become so accustomed to the fare that he rarely needed to resort to such means when he needed to consume his reserves. He had no doubt she knew what he was doing. She knew everything. But he had not been punished. He assumed that his actions were acceptable. When she was displeased, she made her feelings known with a quickness, and he bore scars that testified to such. Time was something that was difficult to make sense of. In his workroom, there were no windows. He wanted to believe he could still tell a minute from an hour, but his only real way of guessing the time while indoors was judging by when he grew tired. Feedings were irregular, and so were not good indicators of time. But the more labor he did, the quicker he felt tired, and so he was losing faith in that being reliable. When he was out of the room, he could of course tell the hours by daylight and the position of the sun to form a rough notion of time, but that just led to questions of how many weeks or months had passed since he had arrived here. Had it been more or less than a full year? Had it been several? He thought he remembered it being spring when he arrived. He knew that since he had been here, there had been several days of snow. He could not determine if those days had been close together or far apart. Was it possible that he had been here for more than two winters? He had tried keeping track of days by making markings on a wall. She had put an end to that. Since he had arrived here, there had been two changes, neither of which helped him determine how long his stay had become. The first was that it had become easier to look at her. The one thing that he did remember well was that at the beginning all he could make out was her ancient hands. Her skin had the tough, wrinkled, and scaly look that old age could bring upon. Her hands had reminded him of the gnarled and taloned feet of a raven. At that time, the rest of her had seemed so bright that she was in shadow. All he could make out was outline and silhouette, but the brightness had dulled and her features had become more apparent. It wasn't just her hands that time had ravaged. All of her features looked wrecked by age. The skin on her face was oddly stretched and mottled. It was a collection of colors that were not supposed to appear on the living. It seemed the only part of her that was truly alive was her eyes, as the rest of her looked rotten and dying. Her eyes glowed with health, vigor, and unending will. They screamed of such deep power that he could not look into them for long, not even long enough to determine their color. The second change was that she had ceased his training in drawing sigils and experimenting with their uses, and started using him in the construction of something. He had not been told what they were building, and he was not going to ask. If she wanted him to know, she would tell him. It was hard to describe. It was a collection of thin metal pipes of different precious metals, gold, silver, and platinum, that ran between what looked like metal cots. Between the two was some form of centerpiece for something he had yet to see. Behind the cots were vats, also connected with similar pipes and tubing. Inside the vats, he had been tasked with inscribing hundreds of runes of different sizes, all with precise locations. Whatever the sigils combined to accomplish was beyond his understanding. With relative success on his own, he could combine two sigils to form a desired effect, and he had occasional success when combining three. Just one of the vats, with its multitude of glyphs, was beyond his understanding, let alone the combination of several of them. Fortunately, his understanding, or lack thereof, did not factor into her plans. She knew, and that was all that mattered. This is what he believed. That he had fully substituted his own judgment with hers was perhaps her greatest success. It was also the reason that when she gave him a task that would take him from what she called the safety of her manse, he was quick to agree that her dwelling was the safest place for him. That the task was something he would have thought immoral before his training was not a thought he had. It was her desire. That was all that mattered. When night fell, he left her dwelling and struck out into the world outside her domain. From the outside, her house looked so plain. There was nothing about the building that would draw the attention of passers-by. It was simple stone, 3 stories tall, with an attached rounded tower that looked to be 6 stories complete with a coned roof. It was of good size, but did not give off the cavernous feeling that was felt on the inside. The tower was a little strange, but even that was not uncommon in the rural community that Demetrius found himself in. To him, that was the most surprising aspect. For all his time of isolation, there were neighboring houses on either side within view and just an easy walk away. For a moment, he wondered who lived in the other houses, wondered what they did, wondered what they knew of the woman who lived so close to them. But he pushed such thoughts from his head. His task was not to learn the unknown about the community, but to take something from it that he already knew was there. His task was to wait and watch for opportunity. The sun would soon set. Under cover of darkness, he would walk down the simple dirt road that led to the main section of town. There he would find a little park, and in the little park he would find a place to hide. He had been told that what he sought would be revealed to him. If not tonight, then perhaps the next day, or even the one after. He was to use all the patience he could muster. If he came home empty-handed, she would not be pleased. In the square, there were trees and benches and bushes. He found a thick bramble bush that, from the inside, not only gave him a good view of the road, but also of most of the criss-crossing paths that meandered through the square. As an added bonus, the bramble's wide, thorny leaves would screen him from any prying eyes. The thorns tore at his skin as he slid inside the bush, but there were few leaves on the inside of the bush, just the fallen dead leaves, whose potent spikes occasionally jabbed him as he lay in the dirt. From inside his thorny kingdom, he waited and watched. What he sought did not present itself. He waited more. The moon grew high in the air and illuminated the heavy clouds that pressed in on the little town. The clouds grew denser, heavier, and then blotted out the light of the moon. The rain started with a little fanfare. There was no crack of thunder or flash of lightning to announce its coming. There was just the gentle pitter-patter of its falling and the growing wetness around him. The dirt under him softened and turned to mud. He ignored the wet and the cold and instead relished the plushness of his new bed of soft mud. Even the occasional thorny jab did not prevent it from being his most comfortable bed in recent memory. The rain continued. The puddle he lay in grew deeper. He realized that if he sipped gently, he could gain a mouthful of clean water without disturbing the mud below. He drank his fill and was satisfied. Despite these diversions, he kept a careful watch and examined all those who passed by his nest of brambles. They were not what he sought. From a nearby building floated a warm light, and the occasional chorus of voices joined in drunken song. There was a flash of memory of being somewhere with warm lights, music and song, the feel of soft skin and a caressing touch. Thunder cracked, and he pushed such useless fantasies from his mind. He had not fulfilled his task, and this was no time to dwell on phantoms. He waited until the warm light of the building was extinguished, and watched the faces of those who exited from it. They were not what he sought. The rain continued to pour as he lay in his bed of mud. The only sound was the steady beat of falling rain. When he was convinced there would be nothing else to see, he allowed himself to drift off to sleep. His dreams were empty and free of phantoms of the past. He awoke coughing and sputtering. The rain had continued to fall as he had slept. Still falling, it had raised the level of mud and water underneath him. A slight shift of weight and it covered his mouth and nose. He had jerked up and away from the water. The pain of the brambles on his face brought him to his senses. He remembered his task and the need for silence to stay hidden, and frantically peered out from his leafy screen. No one saw him. No one was there to see him. He had not betrayed himself with his foolishness. He knew that no matter how long his task was to take, to sleep again would be folly. Throughout the second day, the rain continued to fall, and he kept up his watch. But what he sought did not appear. Traffic was light, and those that did pass did so in a hurry, eager as they were to get out of the heavy rain. As for Demetrius, after almost a full day lying in mud, he knew he should feel sick and cold. But he did not. He felt alive. From the ground below, up would float the occasional beetle or earthworm. Such a snack would tamp down his hunger. For the first time in months, his belly felt approaching full and a warmth spread from the inside out. He fought off such feelings and tried to keep his mind focused on the task at hand. Warmth and comfort could only lead to grogginess, sleep, and folly. She would know, and her response would not be kind. The sky grew dark. Once again, the warm light peered out the windows of the same building. Tonight, there were no songs to hear. The rains had kept most of the normal customers away. When the light was extinguished, he knew he would not find what he sought, but he still examined the scant few who exited. When they had disappeared back to their homes, he only had the sound of rain to keep him company. It whispered for him to sleep, but he fought the urge. She would know. The whispers increased their urgings and tried to cajole him into slumber. He snatched a dripping leaf from the bramble. The whispers continued. He folded the thorny leaf in half so that he could grip it with comfort and purpose. The whispers had turned into a litany extolling the virtues of slumber. He bid the whispers be silent by driving twin points from the folded leaf into the taut skin of his bony hand. As he expected, the whispers silenced as pain blossomed. When the whispers returned, he again dealt with them thusly, beating them back. By the time the sun rose, all he had to do was tighten his grip on his leaf to send the whispers scurrying away into the recesses of his mind. The third day, the rain had finally ceased, and the sun once more confidently strode into the sky. In the shade of his bramble bush, the ground stayed soft and cool as he maintained his vigil. The hours passed. Townspeople walked by, talking about the everyday politics of any small town. None were aware that Demetrius lay hidden nearby. He watched. The sun had begun its decline from its highest point. He could smell the food on the breath of those that walked by that had finished their lunches. The amount of people once again thinned. He gave no thought as to what they spent their time doing. It bore no importance to his task, and he did not want to get caught up in daydreams when he should be watching. At last his vigilance paid off. Even from a distance, he knew the time had come. He could see the red hair he was told to watch for. The step was a youthful one. As she walked closer, he could appreciate that the prettiness of her face and the litheness of her form. This was the girl he was sent to fetch, and she was alone. She hummed as she walked. The rains had stopped, and the sun beamed down its radiance. She felt no need for the protection of companions and had not a care in the world. She was unaware of what lurked in the bushes. He smiled at his good fortune. Not only had her path taken her directly in front of his bush, but she stopped to admire and smile at the flowers sprouting nearby. He was confident there was no chance of her escape. One final time, he searched up and down the road as far as he could manage to see. There was no one else nearby, no one to see what was about to happen. From the moment he saw her, he had begun rocking and shifting, awakening sleeping limbs. The pangs of their awakenings had died down, and they were fully restored. He pulled his legs underneath him so that he was in a crouch and ready to pounce on his prey. The brambles were easy enough to move through if the damage the thorns did to flesh was ignored. Demetrius paid it no mind as he lunged forward. She was startled by the sudden motion of a boy leaping out of the bushes. She was ready to catch what she thought would be a neighbor's child when she got a good look at the thing that belonged in the midnight stories whispered around campfires. His eyes were sunken. His skin was beyond pale, where it wasn't covered in mud and earth. And it was stretched unnaturally tight over his face, so that it was more skull than face. His hands were also emaciated, lacking the softness that rightfully belonged there, and instead had the look of the taloned claws of a reptile. He was caked in earth, and she could only imagine that he had freshly crawled free from his own grave after the rains had softened what should have been his final resting spot. Indeed, he was a creature of nighttime. To see him so boldly prowl forth in daylight added horror on top of horror, as the sun had no power over him. He used a bony claw to wipe his face. What she had thought was simply mud smeared a red track across his face. With a sickening realization, she knew it was blood. She could not find her voice to scream for help. "Follow." The creature rasped at her, and a small piece of paper he held in his hand burned away. Against her own will, she took a step closer. Her body was not her own. She found her voice, but the scream was just beginning to bubble forth and build when the creature rasped again. "Silently," was all he said, and yet her voice pinched off. Try as she might, she could not make a sound. She wanted dearly to scream, to tell her entire village what was happening, but no one would issue forth. That was not her body's only betrayal. Just after his rasped commands, he had begun walking away. She followed. She couldn't stop following. As he led, he would occasionally glance back at her. Each time, there she was, trailing behind more faithfully than any dog he had ever owned. And then he would smile, baring his collection of pearly white teeth. Her body had betrayed her. The worst had been when they saw a wagon in the distance. He led her to the side of the road. He came close and realized that she still had control over her arms. She lashed out, punching and clawing at him. "No moving," he hissed out, and her arms went limp. He fell to the ground, battered. He wheezed and gasped. She stood there meekly while inside her mind was screaming. He looked again at the wagon. It was still a ways off. He looked up at her and together they waited. He cursed himself. It was a damn foolish thing to get that close. Of course she could still fight back. Among the sigils he had prepared for leading her back, he had not thought to include anything for her arms. That could cost him everything. He had wanted to hide in the nearby bushes, but now the wagon was too close. They might have seen the struggle. The best he could do was stay here on the ground and leave her standing. Let whoever was driving the wagon think it was just a quick squabble between brother and sister. He tried not to think about what would happen if the wagon stopped, or any of the reasons why it might. He didn't really know how large this town was. These past few days were his first time to see it. The wagon could be a neighbor or someone else familiar to the girl. It could be her family. She had been given instructions for what to do if someone sought to take their prize from him, and he would follow those instructions if need be. But a stopped wagon and a dead body, perhaps more than one, would lead to questions. And more questions would be sure to follow when the town realized it occurred on the day of the girl's disappearance. For now, they would wait. The wagon's pace was leisurely. The time it took to pass by them felt longer than his time in the mud. He kept his head down and waited. The sound of it grew. He could feel the vibrations of it and its horse through the ground as it passed by. As far as he could tell, the driver showed them no interest. Demetrius smiled up at the tear-stained face of the pretty girl and rose to his feet. "Follow," he commanded once more and continued their journey. She followed in silence. There were no other incidents on the road, and soon they arrived at the stone dwelling of his master. The girl had seen the house before and had never given thought as to who lived there. It was just one more lonely house on a road of lonely houses. She followed him inside. There was a smell of mustiness that seemed to come from everywhere, and the furnishings seemed older than most she had seen. But there was nothing to indicate that such a creature lived here. The creature led her to a dining table next to a large staircase. It stopped, and she had no choice but to stop as well. "Did you bring me what I asked for?" The voice came from everywhere and nowhere. "Yes," the creature crowed. He twitched anxiously, the way a dog might at the sound of its master's return. "Let me see." The same voice rang around the room. A form appeared. She was hard to see. The girl could tell that she was an old woman, but there was something about the way the light hit her that washed away the details. The old woman grew closer. "Be careful, see?" The creature was cut off by a look of sharp rebuke. He shrank back with a cowed look, once more reminding the girl of a dog, but this time one that had been kicked. Through the haze, she could just make out the old woman's eyes. As she did, an energy passed through her, pulling her body straight and rigid. The feeling was much stronger than the creature's commands. Now it was a struggle to even keep breathing. The old woman stuck out her ancient hand and turned the girl's face to one side and then the other before caressing a young and rosy cheek. There was something sickening about the touch. The girl knew she was being felt by something vile. "You are very pretty, aren't you?" The voice was full of greed. "Tell me, are you a virgin?" She did not want to answer, but she could feel the energy pulling the voice out of her. "Yes." "Good." The old woman's voice dripped with pleasure, and the little creature looked delighted at its master's happiness. "Undress." Another command she could not help but follow. There was no grace to how she removed her clothes, and they were soon scattered around the floor. The old woman inspected her. Her hand would dart out to pinch or prod a piece of flesh, or to make note of any errant moles and freckles. "Very pretty indeed. You will be more than satisfactory." She turned her focus to her pet. "You have pleased me very much." He looked up at her adoringly at the words.
"What do..."
The words were a struggle to get out. A brief look of surprise crossed over the old woman's vague face. Her pet looked away, fearing punishment. She ignored him. "You are very lucky. You are going to have the honor of being my next body. As you can see, this one is almost used up." The haze around the old woman lifted. The girl could see every deep line and wrinkle on the crone's face, as well as the milky eyes and the oozing sores that crept up around the head that held only wisps of hair. "I shall take yours as I took this one, and, since I won't be needing it, I shall give it to you to wear until it fails." The crone laid her hand over the heart of her new body, savoring its warmth. "Thank you for taking such good care of it. I can assure you, I will get far more use out of it than you would have been able to do. This body alone is approaching its third century." The cracked lips curled into a smile. "To make the transfer complete, I will need your given name." She fought to keep silent, but once again, the energy pried a response out of her. "Catherine. Enjoy your last night of youth, Catherine. Sleep well." The crone's voice spoke sweetly, and her hand gave a soft caress to the girl's face. All Catherine could feel was revulsion and fear. "See that she gets to a bedroom and that she manages to sleep," the crone instructed her pet. She gave the girl a parting glance, and Catherine could feel her voice being manacled deep inside of her. After the crone left, the creature led Catherine, still naked, up the stairs and ushered her into a bedroom. It was small and tidy. He pointed to the bed. She glared at him. He took a small piece of paper out of his pocket. "Sleep." She was awake just long enough to see the paper disintegrate. She had collapsed to the floor. That it was a struggle to lift her into the bed made him realize how weak he had grown. Without his magics, he would not have been able to bring her back from town. He pulled the covers up to just below her chin. He hoped she slept well. Back in his room, he sat on the stone floor. He did not feel hungry. He felt empty. Her name was Catherine. A memory slowly rekindled.
That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. Deadly Troubadours is now available as an ebook from Smashwords.com, Amazon.com, and Apple's online store. If you want to know more about me, Brent Thomas, you can visit my website at DeadlyTroubadour.com. You can also like me on Facebook by searching for the page Deadly Troubadours. This podcast is available on iTunes, so if you have a moment, please rate and review the show. While you are there, why not check out my other podcasts, Comics League International and Living Japan. If you want to contact me, email me at deadlytroubadour@gmail.com or follow me on Twitter at deadtroubadour. Once again, thanks for listening. If you are enjoying the book, please share it with your friends. And please tune in next week for the continuing adventures of the Deadly Troubadours.